Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man, a lot of time.
Which direction we are going?
Narek El Camino. It would have been DWI.
We have reached a tipping point.
Good evening, and welcome to the end of the tipping point. Our special guest is one of the first legend winners, Terry Lawler, who's still doing his thing. Speaking of still doing their thing, I'm Stephen Platinum, still doing my thing. And, of course, the original doing my thing in the King of Swing, Larry Goodman. How are you doing today,
yes,
Larry?
Yes, still alive and kicking. So, yeah, doing all right. Really happy that Terry wanted to do this show. So looking forward to speaking with him a few minutes down the road here. But you had something you wanted to get into here in this opening segment.
Right off the jump, you know, AEW has had a little beef with the Oklahoma Athletic Commission, which covers sports but also covers pro wrestling, who has decided to use this rule against transgender athletes competing as an excuse to basically admonish AEW. They decided to just warn them this time. But basically, the presence of Nyla Rose in the women's division apparently rankles the Oklahoma Athletic Commission. So they have warned AEW that other actions might be taken. And to me, what that's going to do is they're going to make it where AEW just won't go there, which, you know, you can make whatever jokes you want about what that means, but at the end of the day, it does show, you know, when there are things on the books that don't make sense, and I think having a regulating body cover both athletics and professional wrestling is one of those things that does not make sense. it shows the dangers, because, again, if they have some kind of political agenda, it can be applied to pro wrestling just as well as it can to a sport. So I just thought it was fascinating stuff.
So, Steve, when you say they, like, warned them, what were they, what form did this come in?
Apparently, a formal letter. That was what was being posted, a formal letter from the Athletic Commission saying they decided to go with, a warning this time around, but in the future they should. Basically, the long and short of it was Nyla Rose should not be wrestling women.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Again, you know, Oklahoma, clearly a red state, but, you know, Georgia is as well. And I mean, I think we're seeing, you know, Georgia is sort of the best case scenario as far as a commission and pro wrestling goes, because they have no interest in the wrestling part of it.
Right.
But because, as we could see when we were talking to Gary Lab, there's a lot of latitude there with the individual members of the commission and what they're able to do and what they're able to convince their fellow members of and all that kind of stuff. That it's not very difficult to imagine an agenda being taken out against pro wrestling in any state where you're under the province and you have under the same umbrella, combat sports and pro wrestling.
Well, and those who have been around the Georgia scene for a long time remember the brouhaha with the commission and the state legislature when they wanted to come up with all kinds of rules for pro wrestling, which, of course, thankfully, never got implemented. But that would have been disastrous if had all that stuff gone into effect.
Well, and I think people forget how close it got. Now, the now people like to remember it under rose-colored glasses of everybody came together and we all fought it successfully. The truth is there were the very good, like Bill Barons and some others, who made intelligent, lucid arguments that was able to convince. And you know where I'm going with this, do you not? And then there was, then there were rambling morons like Frank Aldrich, who inadvertently almost screwed it up for everybody.
Steve, I remember sitting in that room when Aldrich started talking, and everybody's like, oh, my God.
I mean, think about it this way. Think of the pro wrestling business. Think of 12 promoters. Would you trust all 12 of those promoters to successfully speak in public going for the same issue? I would not. And
no.
Unfortunately, the more things you put in play and the more things you put in jeopardy, the bigger chance you are that you're going to pay for it. In fact, if I thought it was even slightly necessary, I would move towards separating pro wrestling from the Athletic Commission in Georgia just based on what's happened to Elevate Fight League alone. It makes me very nervous because all it takes is one person to decide, hey, screw you. What if you got somebody on that commission board that was of the mind of, if we're going to start tracking down promoters' licenses for pro wrestling, because I don't think you should have any say in anything. I mean, all it takes is one Yahoo to have some kind of opinion with a board that basically doesn't regulate, doesn't have any kind of formal regulation, self-regulating system, and all of a sudden it's not hard to have
dictatorship. I wonder how many licenses have been taken out this year among the Georgia promoters. I know how to find it out. I might have to take a look at it just to see.
Larry, this will be interesting. Why don't we bet? Well, I mean, even if it's not for anything, how many do you think have been taken out?
A dozen.
And then I will price is right and either go one up or one down. How many do you think have gotten their license?
I'm going to say about 12. I'll throw out a number.
I'll say less than 10. With these myriad of promotions, literally dozens, if not up to 100 or more promotions, I'm going to say less than 10.
I imagine there's some that don't have a clue about even the license part of it, you know?
I imagine there's some people who've just let theirs expire because it's like, well, what the fuck is this thing for?
Right.
Like, I'm basically going to throw $100 at whatever for no reason.
Right.
I mean, I always loved having it because I would always go down to the office personally and renew it. So I would always talk to whoever the commissioner was at the time, sometimes grab lunch, blah, 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 blah. But, like, I mean, it was $100 that you were basically putting in a barrel and burning. Just so you could get that dinky little card that they would print out. It didn't even look good. That promoter card looked stupid. I'll say that. They didn't even care enough to make it look good. So.
Well, you know, Stephen, from what I remember from talking to at least one promoter, either last year or the year before, that they had gotten their license, but it didn't show. Whoever was responsible for updating the data hadn't updated it, and it didn't show that they had a license, even though they did. So I don't know if we can even trust what you find online.
Wow.
Because
again, when you don't matter, that someone has to data process that. And if you don't matter, why the hell is somebody going to data process you? You know, it's just like, does it matter? Do we need to keep track of who we don't need to enforce against when we never enforce anything when it comes to pro wrestling? Probably not.
Right.
But I'll tell you when that becomes dangerous. When does that become dangerous? When they want an excuse to punish pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden all these rules will apply. Remember when we had the dude on from APW and he was so self-righteous and I went, you know, other rules include keeping track of your gate receipts and reporting them. Do you do that? And he got quiet. Because do you know who does that, Larry? Nobody.
Nobody.
Not one single soul. Even the ones who are meticulous about money probably couldn't tell you exactly to the dollar what their game was. Not
very few.
One of them.
The only one I'd say I'd say Tim Blackman probably could, if anybody could.
Yeah.
Seems like they're pretty meticulous about that gate number out there. But yeah. Besides
the point. What else shall we discuss, Larry? You wanted to talk about the Georgia Power rankings, no?
I did want to touch on that. The last thing I wanted to say about the commission was that I thought that was I thought Gary Lamb's interview was exceptional, and true to his word, of course, he did the next day announce their legal firm. And if I was the commission, man, I would not be wanting to mess with that guy.
No.
I
mean, he's a guy, who's affiliated with big-time sports. He's a guy that's used to dealing with regulatory boards and all that kind of stuff. Again, it would be hard to imagine doing much better than him.
Yeah.
And
I'm
not sure.
I think I'd be running up the white flag.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And that lawyer has the power to reverse Uno on the commission in that, okay, if you want to keep running your ramshackle good old boy thing, we'll get that looked at, and it won't pass. It's like a lot of these WWE contract things that every one of them fell when they were challenged. They gave Brock Lesnar a 10-year non-compete clause, and he fought it, and he won because it's just no one ever challenged this bullshit before. I bet you if somebody challenged even the 90-day no-compete clause, I bet they would win because at the end of the day, why are you restricting trade? Like, what? You can't stop me from working. That would be, could you imagine a restaurant going like, yeah, you could, if you leave us, you can't work for any other restaurant. Or what? Like, again, I think people, I think the law has a great deal of power in that people think that it is infallible and that, the law exists and it's real. It's not. It's a human construct. And people come up with stuff all the time. I mean, I talked about that in one of my, slather vlogs where I talked about, this company that I work for, this restaurant that I work for that said, oh, if you give us less than 2 weeks notice, we pay you minimum wage.
Right.
I mean, who came up with that arbitrary horse shit? People wrote me when they watched that, and somebody said, McDonald's tried to do that at one point, but guess what happened? Somebody fought it, and it completely fell apart. Because,
That's interesting, because one of my clients, that's exactly what happened. He did not fight it, but that's what they did to him. They did exactly that. It was a McDonald's. Pulled that on him.
Yeah. Resources matter, and Gary Lamb got them, and so that's going to be a very interesting fight.
So, a couple quick notes on the power rankings. One is that, well, for starters, it sucks about Bryce Cannon's injury.
Yes,
that he's going to be out for that long. The ratings were all completed, but the power rankings were basically done. Before the injury came out, and I knew he was hurt the night of the Classic City when he wasn't there that night, and it did not sound, even from what I heard the next day after the next day, it did not sound good. Of course, it turned out it wasn't good for him or for Georgia Wrestling. I hate it for him.
I do.
So, God, wish him a speedy recovery and that hope that the surgery goes as well as it possibly can, and he takes his time and comes back 100%. What else can you say?
Absolutely.
A couple other things on the rankings. Of course, a couple people have pretty good arguments, I think, for not being ranked or not being ranked higher than they were. One would be Zach Mosley only getting an honorable mention. I think a pretty strong argument could be made that he's top 20, should have been in the top 20. When I look at some of the other people that were in the top 20, pretty hard to argue that Mosley doesn't belong pretty well up that list. Chris Kamikaze not getting mentioned, even an honorable mention. I think that's probably a pretty bad oversight there for Kamikaze.
Yeah.
He suffers from the problem of working for KLT and NAWA and Pro South and not working for any of the so-called big promotions. And if he did, I think he would be definitely ranked higher, but he doesn't. So he toils in obscurity to a large extent as far as the larger Georgia scene goes. And Adam Priest being number 11 is, you know, sort of exemplifies that problem with how to rank these guys, a lot of whom work for Action, that, you know, yes, they wrestle in Georgia, but they also wrestle a lot of other places. You know, Alex Kane was, you know, ranked highly this time. He's definitely been around Georgia more. And if Adam Priest was a like, quote, Georgia guy like an Aaron Dallas or a Bryce Cannon that wrestled tons in the state, he would definitely have to be, like, right near the top. That guy is so good.
Yes. I mean, I was impressed when I saw him at that No Peace Underground show. And, you know, that was my first time ever seeing him in live. And he was in front of a crowd that didn't know him from, no pun intended, Adam. And he got them over on his side. He had them eating out of the palm of his hand, as the cliche goes. So he's definitely high on talent, high on skill.
Yeah, and so versatile in so many different styles. So, yeah, I mean, that's the only reason he didn't get ranked higher. But overall, I thought the panel did a pretty good job. And I am curious to know, and I do not know, who the anonymous promoter who voted, who that was. I think it's a good idea to get an outside voice. And I can only speculate. Only Pastor Jakes knows who that promoter was.
You know, Larry, I know a lot of people might not like that level of subterfuge or whatnot. I think it's awesome. I think it's great that there's so many fresh ideas popping up with Georgia wrestling history and people writing on it, from, you know, the power rankings to when we can get a show report, they're really great, to the news items, to, you know, those incredible flowers columns. Georgia wrestling history has managed to stay relevant. And I think, you know, that when you look at the entities in wrestling that stay relevant, like Undertaker found ways to reinvent himself again and again and again and again. I think women's wrestling in its own way has found a way to stay relevant and reinvent itself again and again and again and again and again. And if this isn't a segue, I don't know what is. When you think of who's the Terry Funk of Georgia wrestling, I would say it is indeed Terry Lawler.
Perfect. Hey, you know, Steve, as I was cranking up the show tonight, I see there is a Terry Lawler intro here. I do not know what it is. There's a Terry Lawler intro recording. I don't know when it was put up. Maybe Terry knows something about this when we get him on. So, I think I see him in the green room. I'm going to go ahead and play this. We'll see what it is.
Hit that bad boy. Let's hope it's not code for some kind of... Never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So here goes nothing.
All right. This is what he was doing. Oh, my God. Does it get better than you're compared to? If you're being compared to Terry Funk and Elvis, Some of those lyrics, I think the Oklahoma Athletic Commission would definitely have a problem.
And here's the star of our show, Jerry Lawler. Welcome to the Tipping Point.
Oh, man, that's very classic, very classic. Hey,
Terry, when you hear that song, Terry, what images does it promote in your mind? Do you think back to when you were doing that gimmick, or like what does it cause in you?
You know, that gimmick, what actually put me on TV, as far as that was my first real gimmick that made me successful. And yeah, I mean, it was such a fun gimmick. It was just easy. Elvis gets over no matter what. So the music helped before I even came to the curtain. So it was a nice intro to get the crowd fired up. And actually, we were on a cruise in Cozumel, and I had a good hair day going on, and I actually had to perform that song karaoke style at the bar to get free shots of tequila.
Ah, great.
things I do for alcohol.
So, God, where do we begin? There's so much ground to cover with you, Terry. Did you...
I'm old, so...
When you were the second person ever to be in the... win the Legend of the Year Award, right after the award was instituted with Ted Allen the first year after he died, and then you were the next one, did you ever think you'd be still wrestling a decade later?
No, and you know, if y'all keep it up with me, stuff is, I've been doing some weekly reflections of my wrestling career. Some of it's personal, some of it's people I've crossed. But you know, 2017, I've always done due to health reasons. But I kind of got on a health kick and fixed it. So you know, I tell people I'm still retired because I'm cheesy. I'm the king of cheese. I'm on the Encore tour since I'm a rocker. But I've been blessed. You know, I'm going September will be 35 years of this business, so I'm in the best shape I've ever been. God's been good to me, and I'm just as shocked as everybody else is that I'm still somewhat relevant in this business.
Terry, you wrestled a very hardcore style, especially at one point in your career. Like a lot of stuff you did was Wild Side Anarchy. How do you attribute the fact that you're able to still physically go and aren't just, you know, walking and talking? Like, you're in there doing it. You're in there wrestling these guys, often much, much younger than you, and you're showing them a thing or two. What do you attribute that to? Is it all luck, or did you do something in particular to make sure you could kind of survive the mat wars?
I kind of got what I call it. Cruise control mode, which you take me for what you get, type scenario. And then when I started looking at 50, I'm like, God, I didn't expect to live this long. I better do something to change. And so I kind of got on a health kick and didn't do so well when I hit 50, but by the time I hit 51, I had lost like 50 pounds. Started taking myself and my health more serious. So I'm in the gym at least four times a week.
Nice.
And just kind of trying to do better for myself. So, I got grandkids and you know, that who expect me to be around a little bit longer and, you know, bouncing on the knees and just play basketball.
Wow.
So, I need to keep myself healthy stuff. So I start taking myself more serious. And I tell people it's never too late until it's too late.
Mm. Mm. I'm curious, Terry, what it was like for you. I mean, first let me say I enjoyed the video that you put up about where you basically were driving around Buford talking about, you know, the way things used to be and some of the structures there and so forth. Could you talk to us about what it was like wrestling Chip Day on that first Disruptor show at Tannery Row?
So, that was my hometown where I grew up at. As the first place I saw my first ever wrestling live event was the NWA GCW. I saw that Wrestling 2s and Andersons and people like that, and I kind of got hooked. My brother has wrestled there several times, and it's always been on my list, and it's got close a few times and never found out, but this time the timing was right. And that video was kind of me just doing storytelling leading up to the show. And, you know, it's a lost art nowadays in some places. But they actually handpicked Chip Day. I had nothing to do with it, but that was the right person. He's been my kid since 97. He brings out the best in me. He knows how to push me and make me strive to be better. So it was a magical. Tell people that was like my personal WrestleMania moment, 34 years in the making.
And
I gotta say, listening to you talk, Terry, reminds me. I think Georgia has a number of unique qualities as far as their wrestling scene goes, and here's another one. I think Georgia has a disproportionately high amount of veterans and guys that the younger ones respect who are still part of the scene who are not bitter. I think Georgia might be the least bitter. Now, behind closed doors is a different thing, but I mean, as far as public face, I think guys like you, guys like Iceberg, you know, sort of epitomize these guys who they could go the, like, I mean, if you want to be mean, you can call the Jim Cornette route or even the Rudy Gonzalez route. Like, these guys who love to bitch, moan, and cry all the time about what the young guys are doing wrong, and this is what's wrong with wrestling, and they're killing the business. Like, you guys just don't seem to approach wrestling in that manner. You just refuse to draw a hard line between yourself and the new generation as a bunch of know-nothing, lazy sacks of crap. Instead, you guys are woven in the fabric, and you're leading by positive example. I mean, do you think that's an accurate assessment, like with the guys who sort of you would consider your peers as far as number of years doing it? Is that the general vibe? Is it just that you guys put on like kind of happy face publicly, but privately sit there and go like, oh my God, we're doomed? Like, because to me it just seems like Georgia's a very positive thing. And I'm curious if that is true behind the scenes, and if so, why you think that is, and why are you so positive still about it all?
Before I answer this question, and it goes along the line of respect, I don't know if I ever publicly told you, or it's been so long ago, but you gave my respect years ago. I think it might have been the second Ted Allen Nightmare to Remember show. You already had your date booked for your show. You changed your time frame just so the fact that some of your wrestlers could be on our show, but also you didn't want to take away from that Ted show. So that day right there, you gained a lot of mad respect for me personally, just for the fact that you knew what it meant to a lot of people, and you made it happen for your guys and for our show. So on behalf of that, thank you, sir, for that day.
That would be my pleasure.
I've always been in tune with what's going on. Is wrestling has always evolved, and you know, and I tell people it's like, because I'm a beer drinker. I might like a certain kind of beer, you might not like it, but there's plenty of beer out there for everybody to enjoy what they want. It's like TV shows, music, so. You need variety to sell tickets. And I've always been like, you know, do what you do And if it works and sells tickets, it can't be bad. Now, if you want my opinion, I've always tried to be positive because that's just the way I live. Is I hate drama and being a stick in the mud, and it makes you miserable. So me is I want to see wrestling keep thriving and keep growing. So if I can help in any way, I feel like that's my job, is help pass the torch and keep that flame lit here in Georgia as long as we can. And I'm just a firm believer is you can be negative all you want to. It's going to leave you behind and keep going, or you can jump on the train and ride it and help keep it going strong. And that's where I'm at. I'm on the train putting my coal on that fire and trying to keep it hot and keep it moving forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Terry, there's got to be things, though, that you miss, I mean, about the way things used to be. I mean, obviously, you've evolved and stayed up with the times, or you wouldn't still be doing what you're doing. But when you go back, you know, gosh, you said 35 years, what are the things you miss about the way it used to be, knowing that it just can't be that way anymore?
I think some of it is some of the older guys are bitter because the kids are flip-flopping, flying, and stuff like that stuff. And I think what bothers me is if you can ride out a whole show or a whole match and don't miss a thing and the crowd's into it, that's great. That is art. But if you've got it all written out and you're trying to pop everybody and the crowd's not popping, you need to be able to call an audible. Change what you're doing and find what does work and don't just go through it because that's what you got lined out. Because it's the fans that buy the tickets. It's the fans who keep us booked. You know, the promoter looks and sees, watches the crowd, and they're not getting the reaction from the crowd, but you're getting the reaction from the boys. Whether the boys are not paying you, it's the crowd that's paying your salary, and so you need the crowd's interaction. So that's what kind of gets me is seeing a really good match, but it's placed wrong. The crowd's not buying into it, and basically you're just either going through the motions or trying to get a reaction from the boys when you get to the curtain. That's the only place. It's not really bitter. I just hate it's a lost art because the way I started out was you feed off the crowd, and whatever they're biting, you keep feeding it to them. And nowadays, sometimes it's just you're going through the motions, and they're just waiting for the next match to come on and see what happens.
How do you feel about calling a match in the ring versus having everything pretty well worked out in the back before you get to the ring?
Each their own. Sometimes I feel comfortable doing it, but sometimes I feel like I get so locked in. This is just me personally. I get so locked in to trying to remember every detail that you don't have actually me in the match. You have like a robotic version of me. You're just trying to, okay, check, 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 check. You're not getting the motion side of me, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. It's something I can feel sitting in the crowd when, not particularly you, but when wrestlers get locked in that mode, often it just comes through that's what's going on. They're going through a routine. Interesting.
Yeah, I was saying recently, like, I'm going to get to meet Stan Hansen tomorrow. And I'm really excited about that. He's one of the few old guys I've never met and who I wanted to meet. Because my two favorite tag teams are the British Bulldogs and then Terry Gordy and Stan Hansen. And so somebody found out that they had actually wrestled one another in Japan. And so they sent me highlights of that match, and then they found the whole match and sent it to me. So I was watching the hell out of that match. And I noted that, like, there's nobody who's this skilled. And there was, like, the right combination of they knew what they were doing, but there was also a spontaneous feel to it that they just can't match nowadays. So I would say a team like FTR is absolutely great. I'm not denying that they're great. I would not deny even that the Young Bucks are great at what they do. But I would argue that neither one of them are as effective in-ring as far as storytelling and being compelling as the British Bulldogs and Terry Gordy and Stan Hansen were. And I can't quite put my finger on what it is, but I really don't know of any tag team that's that good working at, like, on the more national level. I can't think of a single team that I would say even approaches those guys as far as just sheer talent and skill and the ability to tell that story.
Terry, when you get around to a lot of different places, who jumps out at you on the Georgia scene? Who entertains you? Who impresses you? Who are some examples of the guys that and women who jump out at you as being really good in that way?
I always got to go with Chip Day. He's still out there. I mean, not just because who he is. Is I told someone that I always forget how good Chip Day is.
Yeah.
Until I'm in the ring with him or having to be on the same show, and then just like, you know, it's just, you forget things. He needs to reawaken stuff. You mentioned Bryce Cannon earlier. He's really good. He's come a long ways. I'm like everybody else. I hate the setback, but I wish him a speedy recovery. Never got to spend time with him, but him and the whole Exotic Youth guys showed me some mad love and respect at a Hall of Fame induction for my brother a couple years ago stuff. So they're really good. You mentioned Alex Kane, who is making a lot of waves across the states and also in Europe. And actually, he and I work out at the same gym together, so I see him on a regular basis all like that.
Yeah.
He's really good. So it's just so many good people out there. I don't want to hurt nobody's feelings and miss any names, but I worked Alex, Lev, and I was very impressed with his in-ring abilities, just the way he carries himself and the way he actually cares about the business.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you got the Hunter James is making a lot of waves, and his dad was actually trained by my brother, so we're kind of, you know, related through the wrestling world that way. And a lot of people call me Uncle Terry stuff, so I'm acclaimed by a lot of people, which is very humbling by itself.
When talking about Chip Day and the affection and the respect between you and Chip Day has always been obvious. I mean, I remember even booking that match in PCW, which would probably catch a lot of younger guys by surprise, that you worked PCW, and the way that we used you too as sort of like this mysterious, like, veteran guy who was the first guy to really stand up to the Empire and all that. I love that whole thing. I love how your run ended with you simply disappearing and it was just never explained and all this kind of stuff. But like, when you brought up Chip Day, what I thought of immediately is I think Chip has been maybe more successful than anybody in modern Georgia wrestling at transitioning and being on. I think 10 years ago, he would have been on most of the boys' Mount Rushmore. And I think now he would be on most of the guys' Mount Rushmore.
I don't know
if anybody's done a better job at maintaining apparently the longest prime run in wrestling. Like, he still feels like he's in his prime, even though mathematically that shouldn't make sense. But yet he's as good as he's ever been. And I think he's managed to be that guy who, you know, like I said, I think he would be on most people's Mount Rushmore for the past 10 years, maybe the past 20. And that's truly incredible. And, you know, he would probably attribute a lot of that to your influence, which is, again, you know, the great ones help make people. And I think you can definitely lay claim to that. You've had a lot of really powerful influences and very positive influences. I just can't emphasize that enough. Guys like you really help set the tone because, again, it could just be a bitter infighting kind of place, but instead it just feels like a place where at the end of the day, everybody is kind of pulling in the same direction more or less, as much as you can get a bunch of wrestling people to do anything together.
I think it's about as good. It's as good in Georgia as it is anywhere. Thanks to Terry Lawler and other people like him.
Well, thank you.
Terry, that makes me think, going, you know, way back in your career, I mean, obviously Steve influenced you, but who would you think of as your early influences on your career?
Well, it was, I mean, it's cool as I love how you can be a fan of wrestling. You have your heroes, people you look up to. You become a wrestler, and then those heroes become your peers. And you know, so the one man that got me hooked was Wrestling Number Two, and then to be really connected to him. He gave me a lot of pointers when I first started wrestling. Got to spend, you know, some time, quality time with him. We actually did a tribute show with him coming back from Hawaii. It's just, you know, just so many people. Bill Eady spent some time with me after I started wrestling. And I just tell everybody, I try to learn a little bit from everybody, good or bad. And I tell everybody, I'm maybe a 35-year veteran, but I'm also a rookie of 35 years because I'm still learning. And if I quit learning or quit trying, then I really just need to step back. But I mean, there's so many people that, like y'all keep mentioning, I've been working a lot with these younger generations, and they're teaching us old dogs and stuff, and I'm like, hey, and I'm actually having fun again, which for a while, like I said earlier, I hit cruise control, and just whatever it was you got. Now I'm actually having fun and looking forward to, I think last year, 90% of my matches was either first-time pairing or tagging, but 90% of that whole year was a first. And that's
wow.
Unheard of after 34 years. After 34
yeah.
years, I still get a lot of firsts.
Do you have other firsts, hope-for firsts on your list before you call it a career?
I got to tag with my son, which is pretty cool. Buford was a big one on my list, so after that, mm-hmm. everything else is just, you know, sprinkles and icing on top of the cake. Nothing that's really, really grabbed me except for a fact that if at some point my grandson wants to wrestle and get to tag with my grandson and my son, just for whatever kind of match that would be, would just be cool by itself.
Your grandson thinking about getting into it?
He's not so much. He's more in the basketball, which is crazy because, you know, his dad wrestled. His uncle is Anthony Henry. His other uncle was Jason Collins. His grandfather on his mom's side is David Young. And, of course, you got myself. So he's got a lot of wrestling family members.
I'll say.
He just doesn't have that much drive. He doesn't have that much drive, but he's like, he would probably do it for just to make this old man happy. But basketball is his jam.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's quite a pedigree.
Yeah.
Steve, are you still there?
I am, yeah.
I thought we lost you. Sorry.
No. This is going to sound like a really random question, but at one point you were part of like hardcore divisions and did do that style of wrestling with the sort of like, I don't know if you want to call it rise, but it feels like deathmatch wrestling has become like sort of an undeniable presence, at least in like sort of an underground niche part of wrestling. And we see the influences of the spots in AEW and that kind of thing. Did you, when you were doing what they then called hardcore wrestling, was it seen as a lesser than thing? Did you ever have to hear from other wrestlers how you were wrong for doing it and that kind of thing? What was the attitude? Do you remember?
You know, ECW was a big deal at the time, so you had a lot of fans wanting to see that at a show or expect to see that show. So it's like earlier I mentioned that you have variety on the show. You have something for everybody. You have old school, new school, women, hardcore, whatever. You got a variety on the card. You're going to sell more tickets. at the time is, like I say, ECW was the deal, and I kind of got locked into hardcore scene for a while, and it's all I got booked for. Some people say it's not an art. You just got to hit people with stuff and survive. I tell the story a few times, but it's not out there much, but it's probably one of my weekly reflections videos and putting on Facebook or TikTok. But I had over a dozen concussions in 1 year and had a sunken spot in my forehead.
Oh, my
and had
God.
A doctor told me, hey, you know, one more bad hit and you probably won't come back. And I said, well, you might want to buy a ticket because I'm at it again this weekend. I was a lot younger and a lot dumber then, but I think what saved me was, you know, I did the whole NWA Wild Size hardcore run and became the champion, and it was the first and only, because shortly afterwards I got sent off to St. Louis, and Bill Behrens and the Booker told me, like, well, you know, it was kind of a brutal run, and it, you know, there wasn't really Bill's thing at the time. Bill was doing it to entertain the Booker, which was ruckus. So once I had to leave the town, they kind of just let the whole division go away. So what I did when I left town to St. Louis for half a year is I didn't take any bookings. I kind of went off the radar, let everybody forget that I did hardcore, so everybody forget about me altogether stuff. And after 6 months, I came back to Georgia. I started taking bookings to wrestle again because that's what I did. I just kind of got locked into hardcore. But I never really did death matches. I had a couple of matches with Iceberg and a couple of deals with Tank, and that's pretty much Tank's jam is death matches. And you know, I never got that deep into it, but there's a market for it, so I'm all behind it.
Well, and I mean, I think you bringing up Tank is a good example, because obviously, you know, wrestling that style of wrestling really shortened Tank's career, and we really miss seeing him in there. And you know, if only. Oh wait, no, he's still doing it. Like, it's so wild. Like, all of these sort of tales that were like, oh, these guys are going to shorten their career and they're never going to do it. And now it's like, Tank is more beloved than ever, and he's part of the legitimate deathmatch scene. And I think about how incredible that is, how crazy that is. Like, Terry, but I'll just ask you directly, what keeps you doing this? Because, I mean, you've gotten out with all your marbles, with your body more or less intact, your grandfather. Why do you keep doing it? What's the real driving force that keeps you taking bookings and making locker rooms better for your presence and all that kind of stuff? Why do you keep doing it?
I made a comment a while back. I kind of stick behind it. Is death is going to find you, no matter where you are or what you're doing, so make him work for it. So my is, you can die sitting in your house or you can die out there living. And I just, wrestling's been part of my life, not just for 35 years of me being arrested, but a couple years before that stuff, I did photography work, and it's just been in my blood and always want to go. And I love interacting with the fans, the wrestlers. I'm just a people person. And that feeds me. I love that energy level of being out there, you know, whether I'm wrestling or not. I just like being in the middle of that, helping guys. And I'm still humbled to find out that I'm on people's wish list to wrestle. And a lot of times it's young kids, so I'm trying to keep myself healthy enough so I'm not just that wrestler showing up to check that box for them. I want to actually be, give them the best match I can give them. So I need to be healthy to make that, you know, make it worthwhile for them as well for me, and it drives me. And it's just very humbling, and I'm honored that people still pay money to see me. The younger generation wants to spend time with me in the ring, outside the ring, like that. It's just the whole energy level. You got me fired up now. I just love it, and it just beats me.
You know, Terry, when you brought up the NWA Wildside Hardcore Championship, maybe it's because I really had not seen very much of that type of match at that point in time, because we're talking about, what, 99, 2000, am I right about that, when you were at Wildside, 2000, 2001
yes,
maybe?
I left early 2000, I think February 2000, when I disappeared for a while. So it was like the whole 99 into 2000, when it went from ECW to NWA Wildside, that was the transition. I was there as part of the original group.
I just remember those being just like really like brutal, just crazy matches that you were doing at that time. Am I just remembering it that way because I hadn't seen much of it, or did you when you look back on it, did you see it that way?
There was a lot of heart hidden. I mean, there's one photo that I post recent stuff, jarred to memories, is someone realized there was a heart hit, so they grabbed it and just swung it and actually busted the side of my head close to my crown area, and his blood started trickling down and kind of busted up pretty good stuff. It was a, you know, we had a free table stacked high. Me and Damon Steele, we jumped off of the guy's name was White Trash. Kind of splashed him, went through all three table stuff, and I think he pinched a nerve and thought he was done. A lot of whatever happened type situation. So it was, it kind of got a little more hard-hitting than what you would expect sometimes.
Gosh, yeah, I forgot all about Damien Steele. Yeah, you and him, oh, God.
White trash and that freaking stop sign. Terry, how many times did you ever get hit by that stop sign, Terry?
I still flinch now. Every time I go and pull up the stop sign, I flinch and look for him to pop out somewhere.
and Larry, let me point this out. If you were doing matches like that, as I was, in like the late 90s, early 2000s,
yeah,
I think back, Terry, on how stupid we were. Like, the fact that putting your hands up to block a chair shot was seen as, like, the biggest act of cowardice, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, God, don't do that. It'll look bad. Can you imagine nowadays somebody saying that to somebody else? Don't put your hands up. Why are you disrespecting me putting your hands up on a chair? I mean, the things we did. I can't even get over it. I mean, recently Jeff G. Bailey, he had like back issues, and he can trace it back to the bump that he took. You know what I mean? He's like, I took this one bump and hit the corner of the apron. Like, do you have any kind of lingering stuff like that, or have you just been? I mean, I think if anybody's listening to this, I think the lesson of I had to take my health more seriously, and I had to make being like the best that I could be, it's a necessity. Like, people laugh at me because I work out so much. They go like, you work 100 hours a week and you work out. I'm like, I have to work out to work 100 hours a week. It's no longer the other way around.
Yeah.
I have to do it, or else I will have no energy. I won't be strong enough to do it. You know, like, I just had to change my lifestyle. Once you hit your 50s, it's a whole different thing. Larry doesn't know anything about that because he's so young. Terry, do you have any lingering stuff?
Some days I get up in the morning and I start moving around. And I'm like, God, who's eating Rice Krispies this early in the morning? But then I realize it's just me snap, cracking, and popping. You know, I told you I'm the king of cheese. But really, it's just, I can complain, but you know what I did to myself? But I'm like, God, I had so much fun and made so much memories. And does it hurt? Yeah. But you know what? Just getting old does too. So at least I got reasons that I hurt. But like I said, you start learning to take yourself more serious. You realize, hey, I need to be here a little bit longer. And only you could control your own destiny. So grab it and grow with stuff. You're talking about hardcore and putting your hands up. I want to say it's May of 2002 or 2003. My brother and I, they were put us together in Rome, Georgia, Dealers Music Park, and it was a brother versus brother. And I just told him, I said, hey, I'm tired of people taking advantage of brother versus brother, and a lot of times when they booked it, it was because we really wasn't getting along. So they put us in a match, and we wouldn't communicate at all. It was a survival. But on this particular night, I said, "Hey, yeah," I said, "Hey, I'm done. This is the last one ever. We didn't promote it that way. It was just the last minute decision." I'm like, so I told him, I said, "We got to do what we got to do is don't pull nothing." And they put us on mid-card as a street fight match. So I said, now we know what we got to do. We got to show them this is the main event that you should have booked. So we tore up the house, literally tore up the bleachers, the chairs, the trash cans, the fire extinguisher, somebody's car outside the door. And then there was no hands put up for his chair shots. And anybody who took a Steve Ball chair shot knows that they're pretty brutal by themselves. But I did the Mick Foley spot where the handcuffs, and the video is out there on my YouTube page. It's the most sickening sound was I'm partially in the ring with my head hanging out on the edge of the apron, and he swings a chair, and it's nothing but metal to bone crunching noise.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
And then the match ended, and I did such a stellar sell job that I should have gotten an Oscar or, you know, Grammy or something, but the fans were so into it. And somebody was wanting to call the ambulance, somebody wanted to call 911. I mean, they were so good, but this is storytelling. And I said, this is it. And some people try to rebook that match. Well, I know, you know, he listened to me for a change. I'm like, no, this, I'm just done with it. It's just, I hate doing that kind of stuff. And, but yeah, it's like, you know, you got too many people who are too soft these days and want to powder puff matches. And I don't think there's a lot of people built like the Tanks, the Icebergs, the Lawler brothers who can give as much as they can take a beating and still tell a story.
Terry, how tough was Steve Lawler? I mean, you just explained it some, but could you say a little bit more about Steve Lawler?
He was pretty stiff. I mean, he was a good in-ring, a pretty good in-ring worker, but, you know, in the ring, out of the ring stuff, he had a little ring with Stephen the Truth or Stephen Prazak, and that was a little brutal by itself in the place, but he was snug as the underwear. Sometimes he'd be more like a bully. If you crossed him the wrong way, I mean, he took his business serious, but he also sometimes made you earn that payoff. Some days, powder puff, some days bad powder, but for the most part, you know, he was given the nickname the Baller for a reason, and that was his style. And what was funny is when I broke into business, I didn't choose to fall right behind me and use the name. Luckily, I got tagged with a Elvis gimmick suggested by Bonnie Blackstone. So when I evolved out of that and actually we started doing the Lawler Brothers, a lot of people thought it wasn't real. They wanted to debunk that we were actually really true life brothers. So it was funny that you got people who definitely never, ever related at all. People think they're real brothers, and here we are the opposite. It was kind of funny. But he was a
– wow.
He could be a bully sometimes, but he tried to protect the business. He was one of those old school guys.
I remember that about him, protecting the business. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you did, but do you have recall wrestling in the auction barn in Alpharetta?
Oh, yeah, that was during my Josh Rocker days. We had the Alpharetta auction barn. We'd do TVs there, and we would do TV tapings a lot at the Aaron Rents to Own parking lots and Dealers Music Park. That was when I first got my really good push. Scott Hudson was doing the commentary for the Babyfaces, and Stephen the Truth slash Stephen Prazak was doing the heel commentary for our TV tapings. So all three of us have been together for 30-something years.
Mm. Did you have anything, piece in the tapings at Miss Kitty's? I can't recall.
No, sir.
You were not in
that
there.
That was
okay.
Now, my brother did a lot of those. I was actually, they did a lot of tapings on Sundays, so I was at church. I was at church a lot.
Well, anything else you want to share with us before we wrap up?
I'll get some quick cheap plugs. My grandson, I mentioned earlier, stuff. We have a TikTok and an Instagram page. We do a lot of reviews.
Game relevant, baby.
I say, man, you gotta go with the times. So if you want to look us up, we're Poops and Pops 30 on most platforms, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Next Saturday, this is a pretty good show. Shows you how a lot of people are coming together, different promotions. We're doing a show in Old Buckhead, Georgia. Don't get confused with downtown Buckhead, but we're doing Old Buckhead, Georgia. And you got promotions from Anarchy, Southern Fries, of course, GCW, and I can't remember some of the other promotions are actually supported because we had some super fans. Veta and Coco were involved in a got hit by a drunk driver. Mm. So a lot of us wrestlers come together to put on a super show and donate the money to them to help with their bills and cost and, help them out stuff. You know, you got Robert Kitson, WWE Hall of Famer, good friend of mine, and one half of the Rock and Roll Express, he's going to be there. Nick Halen versus Billy Buck. Scott Manson, Alistair Lev, you got, Huckabee, you got Hold My Beer Hanson. There's just so many people coming out to show their support for our super fans. So it's a good time that we get to give back. And then Wrestling at the Southern, they're doing three different shows for free. A lot of people like the word free. They're doing Cinco de Mayo shows, but they're actually doing them May the 4th. So if you're a Star Wars fan, that's a good place to be. They're doing a 5 o'clock at the Indigo Brewery in Sugar Hill, Georgia. And then they have Monroe at 7 p.m. at Southern Brewery. And they're doing Slow Pour Brewing in Lawrenceville at 7 o'clock. So Southern Brewery is doing three shows that day for free, another giving back to the fans. So if you want to keep up with me, follow me on TikTok, Instagram, or Facebook, because I'm a self-pimp. I put myself out there all the time.
Well, Terry, I'm going to say this, and, we're three older gentlemen. That's a nice way to put it.
Retro.
And the older we get, the more we lose things. And so I told myself once I hit 50 a couple of years ago that I wasn't going to let opportunities go by as much as possible. And so, I just wanted to say that, getting to book you is one of the most fun times I had. And more than that, I think, all we can hope to do is leave this thing we call wrestling in a better spot than we found it. And I think, it's undeniable that that's exactly what you did. And I think people have a genuine love and affection for you, including myself, and I think including Larry. I think I can speak for him there. Just thank you so much. I'm really proud of this podcast and of Georgia Wrestling History. If for no other reason, then these things get sort of marked and noted. And the older I get, the more that I kind of understand that that's an important thing to do. And so I'm really glad you did this podcast. I'm really glad you're still out there doing it. I mean, as much as we might joke about, like, oh, these guys that retire, but they don't really retire. But you know what? I don't ever hear those jokes get directed your way. And I think it's because people want you around, and they know that they're better off with you being part of the scene. And I'm just glad you're still part of it, and really just thank you so much. It's just so great.
Thanks, guys. I do have one gripe that I didn't mention our stuff. Sorry for dragging along, but
yeah,
I see so many people, whether old people, young people, who bitch about what they're seeing. but they don't take the time to help it get better. So if you're that person, you're going to take time to complain but not help. You're just as much of the problem as they are. So like you said, we're here to make this better that we're leaving behind so it can keep going forward and growing.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I
said...
No, please.
I just thank y'all guys for giving this platform to talk and ramble on and just share some stories. I enjoy these.
Thank you, Terry. Very much appreciated.
Well, I mean, Terry's out there doing it. You know, follow him on his social media and find out where he's going to be next. Larry, where are you going to be?
This weekend, I think I'm going to be home. And next weekend, now Terry just told me about this GCW show. I've never been down to the old Buckhead, and this might be the time to go. The other thing next weekend is the action show with Mustafa Ali coming in to wrestle Landon Hale. So they're going to be, that's a huge show for them. But yeah, I think I'll be not doing much. And I know you got a big weekend coming up.
Well, yeah, I'm going to be commentating the establishment show and meeting some old timers and seeing if I can get them on this podcast. And cross your fingers. I can't believe I'm saying cross your fingers for this to happen. I think I might be taking a lariat from Stan Hansen.
Oh, we can only hope.
Only a wrestling person could get excited about that and be happy about that. But, like, here we are, 2024.
All right, Steven. Remember, rule number one, tuck your chin when you fall backwards. If he's got his glasses on, it might not be as bad, but if he takes his glasses off to keep your legs, you're done. I'm sorry. I love you. You're done.
The first thing I did was check my life insurance. So all right, that's all. We're all set. That's good. Well, Terry, thank you so much. Definitely check him out. And, you know, we had a back-to-back weeks of the Tipping Point, so that was pretty great. But
very nice.
We're gonna try to keep this thing going, and I know Terry Lawler is going to keep his thing going. So for Larry Goodman, Terry Lawler, I'm Stephen Platinum. Thank you for joining us for the Tipping Point.